for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango.
Tonight on the show, it's Ewoks, E.T., football, and phone sex with 976 Evil, Robert Englund's directorial debut. Hillary's here.
Hey, guys.
And so this was a movie.
I think so.
Yeah, this was...
It happened.
We're real big on, like, being very... very complimentary, if you will, trying to find, you know, the gems in the garbage. This is one of those movies that I was struggling to get through. I will be honest, I was struggling to get through this movie. And it's funny because both Hillary and I at one point stopped taking notes.
Yes, there is just one point where, like, my notes stopped and I feel like I just went a lot in the movie. And then, but there are things about this movie that are fantastic.
Yeah. So we're going to focus on the good, like we always do. You know, we're going to try anyway.
But we're not going to tell you to run out and buy it.
Oh, sweet Christ. No.
Or this, I would want to watch this again if I had gummy edibles.
Oh, that's a thing.
Yeah. So, you know, like getting super silly stoned to watch this sounds like a really good time.
Yeah, I can kind of see where some sort of a alteration, if you will, of your state would make this movie way better.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, yeah. Being in an altered chemically induced state would definitely enhance this movie to where when nothing is really happening, your brain can take a little break.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. From this Robert Englund joint, pun firmly intended.
Yeah. God bless you, Robert. Good old Bobby E. And
I mean, I think all of us at one point have had the hubris to think that we can do something that maybe we shouldn't have done.
Yeah, I do think... I do feel like, you know, I love horror and I know what I really like, and I feel like I would have a great idea for a horror movie and could probably even write a horror movie, but then actually, like, putting it all together and the editing and the soundtrack and doing all of those things I would probably fail in making one.
Yeah. I can honestly say that since I have no follow through in anything in my life other than this podcast and staying clean, I can honestly say there's no way in hell I would be able to write my own horror movie.
Yeah, no. Maybe we should try to make a YouTube horror short one
right,
day.
A short. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I can commit to a short.
Yeah. Yeah, we should try that one day.
We should.
Just see what happens.
We should. So, fun fact about this movie. This movie was actually written by Brian Hegeland, and Brian Hegeland may not sound like a household name to any of you. He did do Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which I'm a big fan of the script, but this motherfucker won an Oscar for L.A. Confidential and also wrote the screenplay to Mystic River.
Huh. Good old Brian.
And this movie.
Yeah, and this one.
And this movie. All right. So, we open this film with a very strange situation that's going on in an alleyway where there's a phone ringing. Now, important fun fact to point out for the kids in the room, or anyone born, I would say, after 1990, maybe, is that back in the day, we had these things called 976 numbers. 976 numbers were not a toll-free number that you called. It was a form of 900 number that you called, which would charge an exorbitant amount of money to your phone bill. See, here's the thing. This was not like, if you have a major credit card, please put it in now. Wasn't like that. It actually charged to your phone bill, which led to a lot of kids calling these phone numbers, like, for instance, the Freddy Krueger line, the Jason Voorhees line, the Michael Myers line, the New Kids on the Block line. These are all 976 numbers that led kids to get in trouble because they would get on the phone to hear the pre-recorded message from Danny Donnie, Joe John Jordan, and then their parents would get the bill and they would get into serious fucking trouble. This was a thing that happened back in the day. It would charge to your actual phone bill. Also, fun fact, kids, we had landlines.
Yes, landlines. And yeah, the 976 was, you know, call for your psychic reading, call to, you know, talk to your dead pet, call to, you know, you have a weird fetish. There's no internet. There's no Pornhub. There's none of that. So you need to call somebody to live out these weird fucking fantasies that you got going on and pay like $6.99 a minute.
Right. And so if you were a businessman, let's be honest, a businessman back in the day, and you had your finger on the pulse of 976 numbers, you were making shit tons of money, hand over fist, pun firmly intended.
Yeah. Pun firmly intended, because I'm sure there was a fisting 976 number.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
And you know, they would ask you, like, are you over the age of 18? But then there was, like, no way to, like, verify that or anything. No. Press one.
No, yep. Press one.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was verified that you were 18 and your parents would get, you know, a $700 phone bill and go through the roof. And then, you know, you would deny it as a child. I may or may not have experience in this and calling a psychic.
I called a psychic, too. Yeah. And my mother, we're going to have to cut this out, but my mother called the 976 line and told them that her kid.
Yeah, no, I told my dad that I didn't. I was like, I have no idea what that is. And my dad was, yeah, like fighting with the 976 that it didn't come from us, this, that. But, you know, they record everything and it was totally me.
Ah,
yeah.
And it would come on this readout. So we had these things called phone bills back in the day. And on the phone bill, you could literally see the phone number and when you called and how long you were on the phone.
Yeah. And, you know, the psychics on the other end, psychics in air quotes here, would know that, like, they get paid the longer that they keep you on the phone. So, you know, there was always some, like, I think I'm getting something, you know, like dead airspace and whatever. And you're just, like, waiting from the message from, you know, whoever I wanted to talk to at 8, you know, of just some pop culture celebrity died and maybe they have a message for me from the other side of the grave.
That's so good. So the funny thing about keeping people on the line was when I was in my 20s, I did phone sex. Phone sex was a thing that you could actually make a fairly good living doing. And so I had one phone sex job where I was actually in a building where I would, like, go to a job in a building in a cubicle, and you had a series of characters that you could choose from that you would play that were your characters. It was kind of cool because you got to, like, figure out, like, this is this character and this is where she's from and this is, you know. And then they had these different levels, right? So when someone would call in, depending on what they wanted to pay, that was what the level was. And so, like, the first calls were, like, called, I swear to God, this is my hand to God, they were called Mickey Mouse calls. Mickey Mouse calls were absolutely no sexual content of any kind. It was literally two people talking, nothing innuendo-based, nothing sexual. Then there were candy calls. Candy calls were calls where you could be, like, you could kind of allude to something. You couldn't say tits, couldn't say ass, couldn't swear at all, but you could say things like generous scoopfuls of flesh or just weird, almost like G-rated filth, which in my opinion is far more disgusting and creepy.
Yeah, no, that is creepy. And especially for a phone sex line.
And then there was the X-rated line, which was anything goes. You could say anything. It was like, rrr. So the first call I ever took, I remember this because I was fucking 19 years old, green sweater, black miniskirt, super excited to be working there. And I took my first call and I remember the dude, like, I did my spiel and then there was, like, this, like, long pause and then the phone went dead. And I said, oh, my God, he hung up on me. And the girl, who I swear to God was 400 pounds, if she was a minute, she turned around and looked at me and she goes, he didn't hang up on you, honey. He came.
Oh!
And I was like, oh my God.
That's what they do here?
That's so offensive.
I always thought that I would be a good phone sex operator, but, you know, was never really given the opportunity to shine, which is a slight resentment. But when I was in prison, like, you know, everybody's got a side hustle for, you know, whatever. My side hustle was I used to write girls fuck letters.
Oh, like to other girls for other girls in prison?
Or to guys in prison.
Oh.
So if you were in New Jersey in...
You probably got one of Hillary's letters.
And you were in prison in 2001, and you were in a male prison, and you had a female pen pal from the Edna Correctional Institute. I probably wrote that fuck letter, and the girl paid 10 cents a line for it. And you can tell me how much you wanted to pay.
That is amazing. Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, I love our lives. So anyway, this movie starts with.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. So
anything not to talk about this movie.
Yeah.
But so this movie starts with a weird payphone in an alleyway and a guy answering the payphone and then dying.
He explodes under a spray-painted Playboy bunny on the side of a wall.
Yes, I forgot about the amazing scenery in this movie. Lot of art direction.
Yeah, the scenery of this movie is seriously fucking amazing. Because there are a whole lot of scenes where really nothing is happening. We're not, like, developing the story or the characters or the plot, really. But there is so much to look at. And that is a huge credit to me. Hoax's house, I could spend a week in there.
Oh yeah, it was really, really fucking cool. So we cut to a bunch of dudes playing poker.
Yeah, as soon as the first guy who walked in, I just went, oh, it's Jared Leto from Wish. Because he looks like the Joker's version of Jared Leto. And I was like, oh my God, I hope you got like credit.
Yeah. Is that Spike?
No, it's not Spike. It was the guy in the overalls.
Oh, yeah, the dude in the overalls.
Yeah. Skinhead, don't call me Skinhead. It's Airhead, buddy.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. And then, I know I've asked you this before, and uh-huh. I know we always get the same answer.
Yeah.
You did not recognize any of the gang members.
No, they are all a different celebrity that I think is just the Temu version of a famous celebrity.
Okay. Well, one of them
is really somebody.
Is actually the super tall nerdy guy from Crybaby.
Oh.
The one with the black jacket and he has his hair slicked back and I think
Hatchetface's boyfriend.
Yes. Hatchetface's boyfriend Darren Burroughs is his actor's name and he also played in Northern Exposure.
Okay.
Yeah. So that would be the only character in there that I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I totally, Darren Burroughs. Yeah, that motherfucker is crazy and lanky and weird looking and everything, you know. But a bunch of dudes playing poker with naked lady playing cards.
Yeah, naked lady playing cards and also naked lady posters all around them.
Oh, all around. Tons of nudity everywhere. Yeah. and a Midnight Oil poster.
And it fits. It really fits the narrative. And a Clockwork Orange.
Yes. There was a lot of really cool stuff going on here. So then we meet.
Again, yeah, that scenery.
Yeah, so scenery. Much to watch. Like I said, so much fucking art direction, baby. And then we get to meet Spike, played by Patrick O'Brien, who I thought, now, if we're going with a fuckable character in this movie, Spike was fuckable.
Today. Yeah, today. Yeah.
At age 62, Spike is fuckable.
Yeah, he walked in and he was attractive and like he owned it. Every one of his scenes, I dug his character even more. I was so rooting for Spike. I liked that he hung out with the bullies. He clearly has a gambling problem.
Clearly has a gambling problem. Yeah,
like, there's a whole lot wrong with Spike. But also, like, I really was, like, rallying for him. And as this is, you know, it's a horror movie and it's 976 Evil and this and that. So I was really expecting, like, him to become, like, you know, the bad guy in some sense or, you know, really be the protagonist, which I guess he is.
But... Yeah, I mean, he's kind of he's the protagonist if the protagonist disappears halfway through the movie and then shows up at the last 15.
Yeah, like, at some point you just go, wait, what? what happened to the lead actor?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this movie. So we cut to his cousin's house. His cousin Hoax, what a great name. Played by Steven, don't call me a gay porn star, Jeffries.
Ooh, but you are one.
Yeah. We're gonna touch on that as well as a lot of other films later. But this is a house of many cats.
House of many cats.
Did you count them? I think there was seven.
I did not count them. They were absolutely adorable. And it is, if you were alive in the 80s and you went to your grandmother's house, you probably, especially in New Jersey, because it was, you know, plastic on everything, doilies on everything. So many doilies and just lace and fluff and just gaudy and just so much to look at everywhere. And that's when we meet Mom.
Mom, played by Sandy Dennis. And Sandy Dennis has a wild story. So check this out. When she was quite a bit older, she was dating Eric Roberts. Eric Roberts was, like, I think 19 years her junior. Eric Roberts gets into a car accident with her car and her dog. And the dog survived.
Okay.
Just amazing. Like, I was like, yeah, Eric Roberts fucking coked out of his brains, you know, gets in this car accident. And the Sandy Dennis takeaway was, well, at least my dog's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a valid point.
It's a completely valid point. Yeah. So yeah,
her character could have only been made better if Susan Terrell played it.
Right. We got a lot of wigs. There's a lot of wigs. There's a lot of, like, Southern accented, very, like, she's obviously a follower of Joel Osteen. If Joel Osteen was, like, still was around at the time. So we're going more like Jerry Falwell.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very much cultish Christian kind of mentality with the, you know, Jesus and the, I mean, the long nightgowns with the frill and the lace and very Beverly Hills Housewives type attire, but that's not really how you're living. You're just dressing it and playing the part.
Yeah, it is a very strange situation. And speaking of strange, we meet Stephen Jeffries, who plays Hoax, as Spike's cousin, because you can't get that. Spike and Hoax, man, you just fucking cannot make that up. I just have a question, which is, why is the future gay porn king of America wearing jammies?
Well, what else was he gonna wear to go to bed?
Jammies. Like, if those things had feet, I would not be surprised.
Well, one, I have feety pajamas and I love them.
Oh, well, but you are, you know, you're a girl.
Yeah.
I fucking said it. Come at me.
Yeah. Okay. Fight the patriarchy. Boys can wear feety pajamas too. And yeah, but like his mom, it makes him wear his train jammies to bed. Lord. For sure. Butcher Baker nightmare maker.
But it's hard to buy. Here's the thing. It's hard to buy Stephen Jeffries as a teenager of any kind when he's hairline literally starts in the middle of his head.
Yeah, no, that widow's peak.
Oh, that widow's peak, buddy.
It is peaking.
You should have just shaved that shit off.
Yeah, but then you would miss that, like, Trump front bang thing.
Trump front bang. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. And then for no reason whatsoever, Spike goes to his bedroom and calls a horoscope line. Like, it comes out of...
Yeah.
Totally random, guys. Like, this... he opens a magazine. This little card falls out that says 976 evil. And it's like, call for your horoscope, LOL.
Yes, which I did actually think was funny. But yeah, then he just dials.
Yeah, like, I mean, the thing is, here's the thing. I can totally see Hoax calling this line because Hoax is like a dork, you know, and like a child in a lot of ways.
Needs somebody to talk to.
But dude, Patrick O'Brien is like, can get it. And he's fucking like, I just want to, or I just lost my motorcycle in a fucking, you know, poker game. You know, like, I'm a badass living in like a side, like living in a mother-in-law suite at this house. Right. But yeah, I'm going to call this number.
Yeah, very no rhyme or reason as to why he would call other than, yeah, seems like a good idea. So then I was like, okay, so you're the one who's like gonna like dance with the devil kind of thing. And then I went, okay, so you're like, you know, the badass guy on the side that's like so grown and so like cool and tough and whatever. And so, yeah, you're gonna dance with the devil and bad things are gonna happen to you then. And Hoax, the nerdy guy, is gonna have to save you with his purity and goodness.
Night, which is, would have been a great plot.
Yeah, which, okay, all right. I you making the call is a little weird, but yeah, you're gonna have to toe-to-toe with the, you know, demon guy and the purity is gonna save you. I like it.
Which, once again, would have been a better plot. So he tries to steal money from his aunt?
Yes. Yeah, out of a fish trophy.
Yeah,
in the kitchen.
There's a fish trophy in the kitchen, tries
and
to steal.
The scenery. Yep.
And that, once again, the scenery. And so then they go outside and they're fighting and it starts to rain fish.
Yep.
I'm not making this up.
Yeah, no, fish just fall from the sky and that's never explained, FYI.
Yeah, by the way, never, it's fucking never explained. And then, so, okay, so you might have to explain this to me because I feel like I missed this. Were there money in the fish?
There was money in the fish.
Okay, yeah. That's what I thought, because I thought there was like a scene where like a literal bass like came through.
Yes.
And he like pulled money out of the bass's mouth.
Yes, okay. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that happens, yep. Yeah, just keep going, keep on keeping on.
Yeah, I don't even know what to do with that information, but yeah, there's a bass with
the
fucking
fish symbolize.
I mean, I haven't read the Bible. I've read like Revelation 7:12, which is like the fun shit, but like I have never read like the fucking the world started raining fish.
I missed that prophecy as well. It might be in there. But yeah, you know, it probably just symbolizes, you know, like wealth and being well fed, you know, Jesus turning them into fish and water into, I don't fucking know.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I get, hey, whatever, you know, and then we enter, Marty Palmer, Modern Miracle Magazine. Literally, that's what his name is. And that is what his title is. He comes in to interview, auntie about this miracle of the fish that have come upon them, and he comes in to interview, and yeah, that really doesn't go very many places. Like he's introduced, mm-hmm. And
yeah, like how did he get the story? Nobody knows, because it only happens on them. Like nobody else. Like it's not the town rains fish. It literally only happens to them. So like, wish Andrew McCarthy is who shows up. That's the journalist PI guy.
Oh yeah, totally.
And he interviews Auntie. So how he got the story, and then goes to Dante's Cafe, where the Rocky Horror Picture Show Riff Raff is now in a different timeline and serving him coffee and a burger and is very much on fucking heroin.
Yes, there it is. See, like I said, there are things about this movie that are like bananas good,
yeah.
Right? But unfortunately, it does not maintain this level of like quirk.
No, yeah. Because at some point I just went, what?
Yeah. Yeah. So next we see Hoax is getting swirlied.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, I mean, obviously it's the 80s, so there's like a lot of bullying going on, and they're swirling Hoax in the bathroom. And then his cousin shows up and is like, fucking leave him alone, you know.
Yeah,
and then
saves him.
And then pays his gambling debt.
Yeah, to not give away his father's old Harley.
Yes, exactly.
And I went, I don't think there was that much money in the fish, but okay. Like, if your 1948 Harley Davidson was going to pay your gambling debt, I don't think we could put that much money in a fish.
Yeah, yeah.
But okay.
There's a lot of things. Okay, so then we see, this is fun. We see a redhead in that same alleyway, and she encounters a phone mart. Remember phone marts?
I do.
Oh, yeah. All the phones were like different, you know, it was like, were the neon phone and the lips phone.
What's the phone that you always wanted that you never got?
The phone that looked like the high heel.
Oh, you were the high heel? I was the cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah, from Juno.
Yeah. Oh, God, I wanted that cheeseburger phone so damn bad.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I feel like I should find one on Amazon.
I think you could, but you also do have to have a land. Do you have a landline?
I do have a landline.
Oh, shit. I don't have a landline.
Yeah, okay. The stepkids needed to be able to call their mother.
Oh, well,
so I. Here it is. Yeah, I put that in. So, now, yeah, maybe I get myself a burger phone for my 9 years clean.
And then,
yeah, back to the movie. Right?
And then but then Spike gets a payphone call.
Yeah. Yep.
And says something to the effect of, like,
look both ways.
Right. Look both ways. And then it looks like he's going to get, like, it, like he's going to, he goes down to, like, tie his shoe, but the IROC has other plans.
Yeah. I thought it, like, a Corvette just comes out of nowhere. And then cue in my favorite character from Pieces, and all of a sudden the journalist just karate kicks it in like the ninja professor, and they just like dive barrel roll into like the next scene and go have dinner at Dante's Cafe.
Yeah, so they go have dinner at Dante's Cafe, so that strikes up their very odd friendship. And then we also get to meet Leslie Dean, who plays Susie. Yes, Susie in the black leather jacket.
Yeah, no, Susie had it going on.
Hot.
Hot, and outfits on fucking point, and she wasn't about, like, the bullying, and she, like, stood up for herself. She was like, you know, when shit was not okay, she had a voice about it.
Yeah, she was, I like her. She's a really cool character.
She was super tight.
And Leslie Dean is an absolutely gorgeous woman. So we are treated to a very strange love scene with lots of chin licking.
Lots of chin licking, man. And a very odd chair.
Sex chair.
Yeah, like for a 17-year-old, maybe 18.
Is he supposed? See, that was another question. Because, yeah. Like, I know they're supposed to be in high school, wink, wink. Uh-huh. But, I mean, he looks like he's damn near 26.
Yeah, and very much so. And, like, I get your parents died, so that's why you're in, like, the mother-in-law suite, you know, to, you know, the crazy aunt that should have been played by Susan Terrell. And you ride your Harley. But, yeah, you have a sex chair in there that you are upside down on, getting ridden by Leslie Dean in your motorcycle jacket with just, like, you know, like, titty peekage.
Yeah. And like, super, super hot. Yeah, you know, like, super hot. You know. And also, sex furniture is so important.
Not as a teenager.
Not as a teenager. I'm talking about, like, as us, fucking, like, old women that we are. Like, I feel like sex furniture is so important because, you know, after a while, it's like, dude, fucking, like, get it, you know, just get a chair that's literally just for the sex.
Yeah, no, yeah, for the better positions and all of that. So, yeah, get a sex furniture in your 30s. Do not put it in your teenage boy's room.
Yeah, creepy. Really creepy.
Weird.
Yeah, totally weird. Okay, so meanwhile, Hoax is watching feverishly with his telescope. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously.
Yeah.
He's wearing jammies. Of course he has a telescope.
Yeah. Buddy. Yeah, that's a thing. So then Spike decides to take his girlfriend, Susie, or whatever she is, to a poker game and ignore her.
Well, he's taking her to the movies.
Right, which is actually the place where the poker game occurs, by the way, because I think one of the idiots is...
Marcus
is actually like a, he's a projectionist.
Yeah. He does that. So he runs a poker game in that room, but, they're doing a horror fest all day for $1.99,
which is, oh man, don't you, what a time to be alive.
Right. You just go there, you pay $2 and tax, and you hang out at the movie theater all day and just watch horror.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And what's fun about this is like, So he, like, takes her to this poker game, and then basically, you know, she's like, you know, hey, she's like, are we gonna leave? And he's like, no, I'm fucking playing poker. And it's like, so what's funny about this is I've never had a guy take me to a poker game before. I have had a guy take me to quite a few D&D matches. And I don't know if you've ever been to a Dungeons & Dragons game, like an actual, like a game. They go on for hours.
So, would you like to hear my D&D story?
I would!
Okay. This memory recently came back to me, so it's very funny that we're here. So, I got invited to play D&D, and, you know, cute boy was there, so fuck yeah, I'm gonna go.
Now, were you a teenager?
I am a teenager.
Okay, got it.
So, I get invited to play D&D for the very first time, and a guy that I like is going to be there, and he is into D&D. Fuck yeah, I'm in. I go to my local Barnes & Noble. I steal the books to create a fucking character. I create a character. I do all the fucking paperwork. I draw her up. I do all of these fucking things. She's just this like little elven thief. Oh, yeah. She was super fucking cool. We get there. I sit down. We start playing. And somebody fucking kills me. His name is Christopher Irons. You can look him up. And he just murdered me right from the fucking rip for no fucking reason. We didn't even get anywhere yet. He just killed my character and I never played again. And I feel a certain kind of fucking way about it. I did wind up fucking the cute guy that was still playing later on, but...
Was that the guy that you wanted to fuck?
Yeah, not the guy who killed me is not who I wanted to fuck. They were friends. So I fucked his friend.
Because he murdered me.
Motherfucker.
Fantastic. That's so fantastic. I remember in order to get this person out of the D&D game, I literally had to like whisper the filthiest shit I was going to do to him so that he was like, okay, so the game's over.
Yeah. Right. Good for you.
Which was good that he actually did that, because otherwise I would have been like, yeah, I'm getting a ride home. So she's obviously feeling very, you know, she's feeling very like, oh man, rejected and fucking neglected. So she's like, well, fuck you. I'm out of here.
Bring me, you know, like leave me home. We already fucked. I like you and whatever. Don't bring me to a poker game that I don't want to go to. I'll see you tomorrow.
It's important also to point out that Hoax has somehow gotten into his cousin's room and stolen her panties.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy. Like, here's the thing. I usually jock pretty hard for like the put upon nerd or the underdog, if you will. You know, I'm not really into short men, but whatever. But I couldn't find it at all for Hoax. Like I couldn't, man. I really tried to. I was like, oh, he's adorable and diminutive and blah blah blah. And I was like, nah, I can't with Stephen Jeffries in this.
Yeah, no, he. Really, his first, like, pop-up on scene, I thought he was supposed to be so much younger. You know, the jammies and the overbearing mom and whatever. And then when they were in, like, high school together, like, in the same grade, I was like, oh, that's a lot to digest.
Like, couldn't you guys have just made this, like, a college movie?
Right, yeah, much better that way. And then, you know, when he was watching them fuck, I went, okay, I understand that because she's hot and this is actually like a pretty cool fucking scene. And, you know, the chair and the jacket, I'm fucking digging that. So I get that. I'm watching, applauding. So, okay. Fucking creepy, but especially, you know, with the cousin aspect. But, okay.
You do you, boo.
Right. And then he just continually kept going down the ladder of just weird shit. I'm gonna steal the panties and like sniff them and and just so much was happening to Hoax where I was like, oh no, you are not going to become the protagonist and save your it's you are unredeemable.
Totally. Like, yeah, he fucking so she meets up with Hoax at the diner. Are we back at the weird diner?
No, he goes to the poker game because Hoax calls the 976 number and it's just like, go get her and have the night of your life. So he like sneaks out of his house and goes down to the poker game, horror fest, meet Susie who's having like a bad time. And then they go out to the diner.
That's right.
And to, you know, have wings and whatever. And they're actually having, like, a good time. And
yeah, he's
being cool.
They are eating pizza like death row inmates on suicide watch.
Yeah. I'm mad. And when I'm mad, I eat.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love it, man. It's, like, reason number 157 to love Leslie Dean in this fucking movie.
Yeah, no, she carries this shit on her fucking back.
She actually does. She actually does. So then the poker bullies, if you will. They show up at the cafe and start fucking with Hoax, and then they reach into his back pocket and pull out her panties, and she's like, I thought you were different.
Yeah. When this scene was happening, all I kept thinking was, can you honestly imagine getting bullied by this fucking crew? Like,
yeah, they kind of look like that first like iteration of Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, very much. Went very like
just like a bunch of skinny white dudes.
Yeah, like a Wish version of a trauma film gang.
Yeah, like very Timu.
Yes. And that's when I'm looking at them with Marcus with his like white stripe in his hair. And I went, stop it. Stop it right fucking now.
What are we doing here? Yeah,
like, I just could never fucking imagine that group of individuals trying to fuck, like, if I was seven, I would have been like, shut the fuck up. Like, absolutely not. And that really solidified me where I was in placement with this movie. Because now, like, Susie is kind of, like, walking out. I thought you were different. She's been carrying this whole fucking thing. And now, you know, like, once she's out, Susie took me with her. Like, that's what happened for me. Susie kind of, like, she's about to be out. And when she goes out, I go out. I ride hard for Susie, and everybody else can catch these hands.
Yeah. Then we see Susie go home and try to make a meal. I mean, obviously she's still hungry.
Yeah. She literally just like housed half a fucking pizza, but she goes home and makes like a microwave deal by herself, a little hungry man, if you will.
And folks, the only thing really scary about this movie is the deorganization of that silverware drawer.
Thank you for mentioning it, because when she opened it, I was like, what sort of psychopath lives with her? This poor girl. It is absolute fucking chaos. I feel like just as a people, we have understood that there are two silverware drawers. One of them has the plastic tray
right.
that organizes your forks and spoons and knives. And then you have another drawer that just like has your spatula and a whisk or whatever the fuck else you use in the kitchen. We as a civilized fucking society have decided that. And what these people did was just they bought a house and moved in and dumped everything that they could fucking find into a silverware drawer and just like bought matching sets at like garage sales. None of the handles fucking match. They are in 85 different directions. And it is absolute, my OCD brain like exploded when she opened that fucking drawer.
Yeah, Slink looked up from his phone long enough to say, oh my God, that is so offensive.
Yeah, just, it is like eating a Kit Kat in the middle. You know, like when you just see fucking awful, you obviously know you gotta break it and eat it a stick at a time. There are just fucking rules for humans. And that silverware drawer is absolutely fucking offensive.
Oh my God. All right. So then, and it's important to point out also that Hoax has a pet spider, like it has a poisonous pet spider, not just like a tarantula who's just like doing his thing.
Right.
He has a fucking poisonous spider.
Which I don't believe his mother would allow, but
yeah, okay. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, no, she was not on.
Like he found him under the floorboards and was like, you're my new friend now.
Right. And you know, like then just put him in a basket, but yeah, mom didn't agree to that whatsoever. And poor little spider.
And so then Hoax decides to conjure up Satan.
It's really the next practical step. I mean, after the silverware drawer, really, what else is there left to do?
It's chaos, buddy.
Yeah, total chaos. So, yeah, he makes a pentagram and calls up the devil like you do.
Like you do.
Yeah. Without any internet or knowledge of how to do this. He just now knows, I guess, from calling the 976 number once.
Once.
And, just decides to send all the spiders to Susie.
Yeah, and this is the thing is I don't understand, because I know she's afraid of spiders. Like, we've established that there was actually a Daddy Longlegs situation in the pizza place where the Daddy Longlegs, you know, and he was like, come on, buddy, I'll take you outside and free you and whatever. Because I'm like, I'm a big spider person. Like, spiders don't bother me one fucking bit. So him picking the spider up and being like, we're going to give you a new home. I was like, cool, I can get on board with that. Like, good for you, Hoax. But then I guess because he knows that spiders are her thing that she's fucking afraid of, he makes spiders come out of her microwavable meal.
Yeah, like, And what did Susie do besides say, I thought you were different because you were fucking a weirdo carrying around her underwear? Like, yeah. I don't understand why we're sending attack spiders.
Right. Leslie Dean did not deserve this.
No, I mean, other than her silverware drawer, but.
Yeah, I know. Well,
and
that
I'm going to blame her parents for that because she's in high school. So get it together.
So then the 976 bill arrives.
Yeah.
The phone bill does come to the house, people. This is a thing that happens.
Oh, boy.
And Mom is mad.
Yeah, obviously Mom is mad. And, you know, Hoax is obviously saying that it's Spike. It's not me. I'm your good little boy.
Right. And then a very strange scene occurs at the high school where Hoax admits to killing Susie to Spike and calls her, my personal favorite, a dirty Jezebel whore.
Yep, a dirty Jezebel whore. And the locker room is, again, almost like a trauma film. Like,
yeah, very much so. Very smoky.
Very, very so. So much smoking. The Motley Crue song was written about this bathroom.
Smoking in the boys' room.
For fucking sure. Oh, yeah. There's a weird laser light show going on in the background, and again, no real reason understood. And yeah, Spike is just, you know, like pushing him up against the lockers, and then like naked girl on a locker, and just he's like, yeah, I sent, you know, the killer spiders to kill your dirty fucking girlfriend,
and now we can be together.
Yeah, now it's like you and me together, weirdo cousins.
Let's get on the bike.
Yeah, it's, yep.
And then, in case you're missing the PI, who just randomly comes into our lives as
a journalist.
Who was a journalist at one point and is now a PI. Mm-hmm. He actually, so he comes to the school because he's going to interview, because I guess he's going to interview Hoax for whatever reason. I'm not really sure why he wants to question him, but that's become, he becomes hot for principal.
Yeah, very principal, guidance counselor. I don't know that her role is ever clearly defined.
No, I know she's not a teacher.
No, not a teacher, but literally could be the fucking lunch lady. Literally, no idea. But nice tits.
Oh, God, gorgeous. I really dug her. I did dig her. I thought she was great. She looks great in a pair of jeans.
Yeah, I just, there wasn't enough of her, and I was so Team Susie that you can't now give me a new girl.
No, you can't do that. And then the PI decides to. Okay. So, all right.
Bear with us, guys.
We're really trying here. You know, we're trying to find the good. So, the PI finds out that people have been calling the 976 line.
Yes.
So then he tracks down the 976 line to this, like, 976 warehouse.
Yes, and meets, you know, the owner director,
Robert Picardo. And if Robert Picardo looks familiar to any of you genre fans, well, he's probably because he's been in Inner Space, Gremlins 2, and apparently some iteration of Star Trek. I'm not really sure.
Okay. But I do love it when they're talking and he tells PI journalist Wish Andrew McCarthy, you know, I'm just trying to save on benefits. And I was like, 976 operators had benefits in the 80s?
I didn't have fucking benefits. Jesus.
Yeah, I was like,
well, I probably wasn't in that job long enough to get benefits.
My God. Like, people working at Walmart can't get fucking benefits, but this 976 guy is just trying to do right by his people.
That's right. And then, what a weird fucking thing. And then there's actually, like, they kind of, like, walk through these different rooms, and they see these different, like, types of 976 numbers, right? There's, like, the psychic hotline. There's the horror line. There's the sex line. There's all these different, like, places in this really grimy fucking warehouse.
Yeah. And then they just, like, open a closet that is covered in cobwebs. And there's just, this is the horror line, and you call in, and it's literally just an automated recording.
Right. And he says, but I shut it down 2 months ago because people aren't interested in it anymore. Now people want E.T., Ewoks, and football.
Yep. E.T., Ewoks, and football.
So then we're back in high school again, and Hoax is trying to dissect a frog. Trying not to dissect a frog.
Yeah, he's all, the nerdy kid is now upset about dissecting a frog.
Yeah, it's weird. And then the teacher's like, well, you can go, whatever. And so he goes.
Werewolf.
He goes right. He goes into the boys' bathroom. He's about to get bullied again, and then he develops a werewolf hand.
Yeah, yeah. He
one werewolf hand.
One, just it's all really all you need. I mean, two werewolf hands would just be ridiculous. How could you walk around? But yeah, one werewolf hand to start slashing the bullies' faces.
Yes. So he slashes the bullies' faces, which is. It's kind of cool because, like, once the transformation type stuff starts to happen, then you get to see the Kevin Yeager special effects, which are great. Kevin Yeager did all the special effects for Nightmare on Elm Street up to a certain point. He brought us, you know, the wonderful world of Chucky, where he actually met his wife, which I love. And he's amazing. I'm just saying, like, the dude made a fucking YouTube video about how much he loves his wife. And he's, like, the special effects artist, and he's, like, very yummy. Anyway, special effects artists really are, you know, just delicious, in my opinion. They really are just yummy. So we get to see lots of Jaeger effects, if you will. And then busy signals.
Yeah. then
back in the day, yeah. Folks and chillins, we did not have call waiting.
No, if you called somebody and they were on their landline, it just made a type noise.
Busy signal.
Yeah, and that's what that sounded like. And you could not get through. And the best part about the busy signal is that one cousin sees the other cousin on the phone and still tries to call him to get that noise, knowing full well... I can't get through.
Right.
You are on the phone.
Oh my God.
And then we're just going to cut over to another poker game.
Right.
Where we now have a new skinny brunette. And they are playing strip poker.
Oh, is that what they're playing?
Yes. And
I thought she just started stripping just because she was like the girl that stripped for everybody.
No. She is playing strip poker. She loses a hand. And so she gets up on a chair, takes off her oversized hoodie, and I guess she lost two hands because next her pants come down and she is in the most ridiculous fucking underwear ever. They are 97 sizes too big. She is a very, very skinny brunette.
She's tiny.
Teeny tiny. And this underwear could have fit Mama June. There's a Honey Boo Boo reference for you, and she is just dancing on a chair in these fucking bloomers, and werewolf possessed demon hoax now crashes the party.
He crashes the party, he takes two of the guys outside and fights with them, and then comes back in and puts their hearts on the poker table.
Mm-hmm. And then takes Marcus's hand.
And then literally takes Marcus's hand.
Yeah. Yep. Literally removes it. And Hoax leaves with the hand. Takes the hand.
Yeah, just takes the hand.
Yep. And Marcus is, you know.
And this is when I literally stopped taking notes. It says shit gets weird and then there's nothing else.
Well,
did you keep taking notes?
I have a few more because then the journalist PI. Oh, no, I do have one other note. So Hoax then kills Marcus and keeps his hand. And then he goes home, kills his mom, and possibly a parrot. There is no parrot violence that you see, but he may have murdered the parrot with his werewolf hand.
Yeah, it was kind of off camera, but it was definitely there.
Yeah, it is very implied, but he also might just be a pirate now, because he is transforming into a lot of things. So it might just be on his shoulder, and he's got a peg leg, or an extra hand, or a hook in the hand.
Which would have been so much better.
Right. Like, that could have happened. We don't know. And then the journalist PI goes to Hoax's house and is climbing the trellis with the...
Very Nightmare on Elm Street, guys.
Yeah, with the, you know, guidance counselor lunch lady in the nice pair of jeans. And then he falls down, but we're really not sure why they're there or what happens. And then the house is covered in snow?
Yes, yes. Then, no, like I said, we're not making this up.
Yeah, no.
Guys, this isn't like Death Spa where, you know, where it's actually interesting shit that happens. This is just shit that just happens. It's just super random, right? So, yes. Then, clearly, hell has frozen over, LOL. The house is completely covered in ice, snow, and... Yeah, nope, ice and snow. And, not caverns.
Yeah, no.
Crevices?
What are they called?
Craters?
Craters? Yeah, like the...
What's it called where when the earth opens up and there's a big hole in it?
Yeah. I think a cavern, a crater, any of those words, I believe, work.
God damn it.
Yeah, like the earth just kind of opens in random places in the house.
Barbecue fork.
Yeah. We still don't have that word. It is a barbecue fork.
It is a barbecue fork from last week. And if you listened to last week's episode, it was indeed a barbecue fork. And that was what we were trying to come up with.
Yeah. And that's what it is. And then...
A grill fork?
Yeah, man, ask your boyfriend. I don't fucking know.
He told me that he goes, I think it's a grilling fork. I think it's what it is.
I feel like it has a different name. But again...
I do too.
Yeah. But what it is, I don't fucking know.
Okay. So anyway, a giant hole has opened up in the earth. Very The Gate.
Yeah, very The Gate. Very nod to The Gate.
Better movie, by the way.
Yeah, no, we should
do The Gate.
It's on the spreadsheet.
Okay. Yeah,
okay. We should do The Gate. Okay. And so then people are like falling in and then like not falling in, but then they get saved, but then they like fall in and then they're hanging on the cliff. And then Spike comes back.
Thank God. Because Spike comes back and I'm like, where did you go for 45 fucking minutes, man?
Yeah, you beat up Hoax in the bathroom and then that was it.
That was it. It was like deuces.
Yeah, he was just like, I'm going to go make a better movie somewhere else.
So he went off. Right. Patrick O'Brien said, seriously, see ya, I'm gone. Then... Hoax tries to sexually assault the principal.
Yeah. Well, yep.
That's a thing that happens. Which is okay. So it's funny to point out that Hoax is played by Stephen Jeffries, who is 100,000% gay. He did a movie with Amanda Bierce, also a fine, proud lesbian. And they also did another movie together called Fraternity Vacation, where they play love interests. And I have to wonder, at what moment in that movie where he was like looking at her like, bro, I am strictly dickly. Like, I do not go anywhere near the vagina. And then she looked at him and she was like, I'm all about the vagina. And they were like, we're going to be great friends.
Yeah. So I've never seen the movie. But
then they both show up in Fright Night.
Oh, right. Okay. Now I see the full circle where we came from.
Right, exactly. So they both show up in Fright Night, and it's like, oh, okay, so that's a thing that happened. And still, I wonder. But Stephen Jeffries went on to a sort of mini career, if you will, as a gay porn star named Sam Ritter. Now, we've asked PJ, friend of the show, and PJ has pointed out that... these are very low rent gay porns, and that they really...
I'm shocked.
Just not a lot of production value.
I don't believe that for a second, PJ.
Very low. It's funny because he called him a low bottom, and I went, oh, so he's a bottom. And he goes, yes, but that's not what I meant.
Yo.
He meant bottom of the barrel budget-wise gay porn.
I don't believe that Hoax did that.
But I feel like we probably would have had a better time had we watched Leather Intrusion Case 4, Leather Intrusion Case 2, Leather Buddies, Uncut Glory, which sounds fantastic, Halfway House Hunks.
I lived that, so.
Yeah, that's true. We both kind of. Semen Training Day.
Oh.
Or Butt Machine Boys.
Well, Butt Machine Boys is a classic.
It does sound much better. Yeah. So anyway, we're back at the house. It's frozen over. There's a giant hole in the earth. Hoax tries to sexually assault the principal. Patrick O'Brien, i.e. Spike, shows up and says, Hoax, I know you're in there. I know you're in there. Like, fight it. Like, I know you're in there. We're gonna be together. We're gonna, like, go off on a motorcycle together in the sunset, and you and I, and it's us against the world and whatever. And then I think I just stopped. I think I just continued to live my life. I don't remember what happens after that.
I think Spike kills him.
I think, yeah, Spike throws him over.
Yeah, Spike, I believe Spike throws him in the hole.
Yeah.
But my notes have stopped.
Yeah, so my notes stopped too. And then we flash to the 976 warehouse, and Robert Picardo is looking at a file, and he has a picture of Hoax, and he's like, oh, case closed. What's next? And then he like picks up the phone. I don't know, dude. It's like that's the fucking end of the movie. It was so confusing.
Goes into the file for the 976 evil number. The end.
No, that's it. That's it, guys. So, whew. Okay. So, like I said, this is a one and done. This is oddly enough not free on Tubi.
No, yeah, no, I had to pay $3.59 to watch.
$3.59. There was a price lowering on Amazon because it was $3.99, and then it got down to $3.59. So you can, if you want to, watch this on Amazon Prime and do a one and done. But it really isn't worth it.
Unless you're super silly fucking stoned.
There you go.
This would be worth it. This is a good purchase for $3.50 if you are absolutely out of your fucking mind and you want to just laugh and have a good time with your friends.
True dat. Okay, so if you want to follow Manic Movie Monday on socials, please follow us on Instagram or Facebook. We have our own Facebook group, so to speak. And next month is May I Have a Foreign Language Horror Film Month.
Yes. May I please discuss foreign horror films, Aaron? Please. I love them so.
There we go. So our next movie is going to be High Tension.
Fuck yes.
Yes. Love it. Amazing. And so we're sorry about this. And please don't watch this movie. And as always,
stay manic.